Hey, I want to thank Courage to Lead for sponsoring this month's podcast. Courage to Lead is led by a friend of mine and my personal coach, a guy by the name of Sean Lovejoy. He has been a real estate developer, a church planner, mega church pastor, and now the CEO of a fast-growing coaching and consulting organization. Sean's been a guest on the podcast, and I've gotten to know he and several of his coaches that help pastors and business leaders all across the country. And recently, I was invited to join their team to be one of their coaches. Listen, I've just learned this over time. You can only get so far on your own know-how and own intellect, wisdom, experience, and smarts. You need someone that can coach you and help you see the things that you cannot see. And Sean has done that for me, and their coaches have done that for countless leaders and pastors. And now I'd like to do that for you as well. So if you'd like to inquire about either me being your coach or receiving a coach, contact me at PastorRustyGeorge.com, and you can click the link there to find out more information. If you'd like to just go to Courage to Lead to find out more about what they do, you can go to CourageToLead.com, a great world-class coaching organization helping you build a killer team and grow your organization. I'm so excited to be a part of their organization, and I would love to meet you there. Thank you to Courage to Lead for all that you do for leaders and all that you've done for me. Following Jesus isn't always easy, but it's not complicated. Join us each week as we work to make faith simple. This is Simple Faith. Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. Today, I'm real excited to have one of the co-founders of the band For King and Country with me today, live in the studio, which is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be sharing this conversation with you that I had with him, not only about his music, but also about his movie career. He's got a new movie coming out called Unsung Heroes, which you're definitely going to want to take a look at, and I cannot wait for you to hear from him. Ladies and gentlemen, Joel Smallbone today on the podcast. Hey, well, Joel, thank you so much for being part of the show today. Boy, you're in the middle of a lot of work promoting this movie.
Yeah.
Typically, when we talk For King and Country, it's about music, but you've been doing movies now for a while. How many years? I mean, you were telling me you started as a kid.
Yeah.
But when did it become like, this is a thing?
Well, first things first, Rusty, thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming.
Great to be with you. You know, it's an argument, right? Music chose us more than we chose music because we grew up in a musical family. Our dad was a concert promoter in Australia. And so he would bring bands and artists down to Australia. And that's actually where the film Unsung Hero sort of picks up, is him bringing American artists down to Australia and a tour going sideways and losing what would be the equivalent of $500,000. But anyway, fast forward a couple of decades to, or 15 years to us being in America, and me being a teenager after a lot of years of being in the States, rather than writing songs as teenagers, we would go make short films, like bad Indiana Jones spin-offs.
Nice.
And we'd play them for our youth group, and we developed our own little TV shows. And then Luke and I started working on For King Country, which always, you know, our music videos were always theatrical. We've done them with our brother Ben, who's a director. And we worked on a feature film, which you were loosely tied to in 2016, called Priceless. Mm-hmm. And our live show's always been very theatrical as well. So it actually feels like sort of a natural next step more than like a hard left turn for the band to get into movie making, particularly with this story being so close to home.
I can definitely see that. I've seen you all perform before, seen your videos, even your music. It's not just three chords and a cloud of smoke. I mean, there's a lot going on. Right. Even your first song that kind of was popular, Fix My Eyes. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening before you even sing. So the theatrics I kind of get. So has your movie making, has that kind of developed over time from the first film, which was the first film?
Undoubtedly. Well, it depends on if it's my first film or our first film.
So okay,
Luke and me and the band really championed Priceless, the movie. Mm-hmm. Song called Price is something we shared about from stage a lot.
Right.
And then I've had these little dabbles in filmmaking for years. I did a country film in 2014 where I played Billy Ray Cyrus's son.
Okay.
With Priceless. I did another film, speaking of playing sons, that released last year called Journey to Bethlehem. It's a musical. I play Antonio Banderas' son.
That's right.
And
that's
now right. There's like this flip-flop where I'm playing the father in a film with Unsung Hero. I play my own dad in the film, which I've dubbed a very expensive therapy session. So we've had enough like blips on the radar, though, by the grace of God, I think, to get my sort of acting feet under me, because acting is very different from the stage.
Right.
Everything with the stage is just big and boisterous, and you're sort of playing to the person in the back of the room.
Right.
And with the camera and film, everything is just
audience.
It's all right here. Yeah. You know.
Wow. I forgot you were in Journey to Bethlehem. I love that movie.
Aww.
Now, there were people that didn't like it. They thought it was... We're taking the story too lightly.
Right.
Did you get pushback like that, or did you?
Funny, I never did. I mean, it was different from Mariah and me. So Mariah, my wife, played Mother Mary's sister, Deborah, in the film.
Okay, okay.
And she got cast in it first. And then I, at the very 11th hour last year, actually, I was flying over to Spain where they filmed to visit her for 4 days. And they had literally just cast Antonio mid-production. Mm. And they called and they said, hey, would you like to... Mariah actually called and said they want to offer you the role to play Herod's son, Herod Antipas. And the whole project was a delight for her and me. I felt as a director, I felt for Adam Anders and Nikki Anders, the ones that wrote and wrote all the music and the screenplay. Because there were folks that I just felt the spirit of it was so joyous and so creative, and the music, and I felt the tenets of the story were very much, obviously it's the greatest story ever told, the tenets of the story were very much intact, but they weren't running around Jerusalem singing songs, at least that we know of at that point. And so it was a bit sad for him, but no, all I've gotten is 8-year-olds coming up saying, more than my music, like with a spear in hand trying to do the dance to In My Blood, you know?
Yes, that's so true. Well, I got to be honest, you know, it's Christmas. It's a Christmas movie. I thought, well, we should see it. I'm a pastor. Right. I feel like I should see this.
Right.
But then I get there and I realize it's a musical and I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I don't like music.
I know, what are we doing? But first of all, the movie was great. The music was really, really good.
Oh, the music's world class.
I mean, like the song Mary sang, I thought, boy,
I wept. I cried.
This is powerful.
Every time I, Mother to a Savior and King is what the song's called. I cried every time I hear it. I think it's a classic.
It's a great song. Yeah. Really well done, too. Okay, let's talk about Unsung Hero.
Yeah.
Movie's about your family.
It is.
Give us some background on it.
Yeah, well, like I mentioned at the beginning of the episode here, it kind of starts in Australia. You know, it starts with Dad promoting shows at the Sydney Opera House. It actually, if we're going to get very specific, it starts at a Stryper concert, which were some of my first memories, Rusty, were like at Yellow and Black Attack Stryper concerts or holding their vinyl 45s. And so this is, she's done it. Hero. She brought the coffee.
For those not watching on YouTube, shame on you. You're missing the receiving of coffee right now for Joel.
This is the liquid of God for me.
While you take a drink, can we just talk about Stryper for a little bit? Because that was a huge part of my growing up.
Whoa.
I loved Stryper. And
did you have long hair?
I did not. No. I was not allowed.
Did you wear spandex?
I did not. I was not allowed. My parents would sooner I watch a Whitesnake video than a Stryper video because they were
out.
Oh, sheep in wolf's clothing. You know, or wolves in sheep's clothing. I flip that around.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, I had to kind of hide it, but I loved it. And the fact that you referenced the original Yellow and Black Attack tells me you're a true fan.
True fan. It's actually crazy because we just launched a hilarious and very preposterous version of To Hell with the Devil with Michael Sweet on guitar for King and Country and Lecrae.
Oh my.
And it is just as ridiculous as it sounds. It's amazing. We did a music video. Caden actually is sitting over here to the side and directed the music video. And we did a whole thing. And so the film, we're getting sidetracked. This is why you listen to these, right? Because
right.
You're just going
I'm so
rabbit
sorry.
Trails.
I'm just stuck on
so
the
we
yellow
start,
black
So we start, the film starts at this Striper concert. And it chronicles Dad losing everything in Australia through a tour that went bad. He lost the equivalent of $500,000 today. And then in the name of you know, chasing a dream, Mum and he agreed to move to the States. He'd been offered a job for 2 years. And so six kids. Mum was 6 months pregnant at the time. 16 suitcases. Moved halfway around the world from everyone we knew, from the accent we knew, from the world we knew, the life we knew. And then when we arrived, almost immediately lost his job. And so we were stuck on the other side of the world. And this is the 90s with nowhere to go, no one to turn to. And so we sat in a circle and we just prayed for everything. You know, we prayed for a car. We prayed for checks to cover our rent. We paid for our little sister to be born in a hospital. Prayed for the next meal. And obviously Luke and I were very young at the time, like I said, but we just saw God do incredible, miraculous interventions through the community, through the church, and through unexplainable events. And so about, it was 2020, was in the middle of the pandemic. Luke has shared this story from stage for years as a pay it forward child advocacy segment of our show. And he'd came up with the idea of like, what if we just have someone put pen to paper on a screenplay. So that was 2020.
Wow.
And here we are almost 4 years later, and Lionsgate's putting it in 2,500 theaters, which is outrageous.
What's the main message you hope people walk away from after they see this movie?
Well, it's an adventure film. Like, it's a drama for sure, but it's such a, it's a family film. It's an adventure film. It's a true story. It certainly circles around mums and miracles and music and migration with us moving from Australia to the United States. But it's really a, it's a film. There's a great line in the film where our granddad says, "Your family's not in the way; they are the way." And that's probably, if you had to anchor, like, lock down what the sort of sentiment is, that. That was really kind of the why behind it, is that, you know, it chronicles our sister Rebecca and James starting, like, stepping into music and us kind of becoming the road crew. And as we, and she was really the one that sort of pulled us out of a level of poverty that, you know, all too many people know about. And so, yeah, I think the why is family, is to put family on the screen. It's interesting, even in the faith and family film genre, there's a lot of faith films. There's actually very few. Can you name a family film, maybe other than Journey to Bethlehem? Like, there's not been many family films. And so we felt it's 2 to 82. It's an opportunity for people to come to the theater, so much so that we've dubbed April 26th the release date Family Day. You got Mother's Day, you got Father's Day. We could use a good family day at the theaters. And so, man, we hope people come out and experience this special story.
You mentioned playing your dad was a little bit of like a very expensive therapy. What did you discover about him through that process that maybe you didn't know before?
That's a good question, Rusty. When we moved, of course, because we were so young, we had always experience this story from a childlike perspective. And it was such an oxymoron, because although we felt so we were so unsafe emotionally, you know, logistically, physically, we felt so safe spiritually and emotionally in God's love, if you will, and in our family's love and in our parents' love. And so for us, it was a great adventure. When it came, I co-wrote the screenplay as well. So when it came time to writing it, and then particularly playing Dad in it, it was like, oh my goodness. The anxiety, the compounding failure, the pride, the insecurity, the journey that he went on, you know, really dropping into his shoes as someone now who's is roughly his age when he moved.
Wow.
Man, it gave me a whole other level of empathy for him that that I'll take to my grave, you know.
Your parents are not in the way, they're the way.
Family.
Family.
Maybe parents can be in the way sometimes.
I love
but
that.
But family's not in the way, they are the way.
They are the way. Yeah. I love that. Anybody in the film that you want to talk about that was kind of a had a breakout performance or
boy,
keep an eye on them?
Well, some unabashed fun facts about the film. If you were a fan of the TV show Nashville, Jonathan Jackson is in it. If you were a fan of the TV show Lost or John Locke, Terry O'Quinn is in it and does a marvelous job. If you're a fan of the Fast and the Furious franchise, Lucas Black, who was the lead in Tokyo Drift, he's tucked away in there. If you're a fan of the Hallmark Channel, you got Candace Cameron Bure.
Oh, of course.
But one of the great performances of the film was by a woman named Daisy Betts, who played our mum, and she was also one of the miracles of the film, because she you can imagine. So I mentioned I played dad. I also co-wrote the screenplay. I also co-directed it. Very indulgent, I know. And but part of the director's role is to cast the movie. So you're casting your sister and your sibling. You're casting yourself, which that's a trippy exercise.
Wow.
But you're also casting your mum. And I think I almost drove Beverly Holloway, our casting director, mad because it was such a sacred cow for me, casting mum.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some rules that I just did not think were breakable. One was that she was genuinely Australian.
Mm-hmm.
And one that she was around the age that mum was, and thirdly that she was actually a mum in real life.
Hey, let me interrupt this podcast to just remind you about CourageToLead.com, a great organization that is helping leaders build killer teams. And I'm happy to announce that I am now part of their organization, helping pastors and business leaders. If you'd like to learn more about me being your coach or finding a different coach, just check it out at my website, PastorRustyGeorge.com, for more information. All right, back to the show.
Once you do that narrowing, Rusty, there's not a lot. So our dream, you know, at one point was Rose Byrne. We talked to Teresa Palmer's team, who are both Australians, both mums. And for various reasons, they couldn't do it. So we were down to the 11th hour.
Hmm.
10 days. We did not have our Helen, my mum, 10 days before we were going into production for a film. Like, we didn't have our unsung hero.
Hmm.
And I pulled up, we typed in like on Google, like top 100 Australian actresses. Ironically, Rebecca, our sister, was one of them. So for a split second, we were like, should we? And they're like, nah,
that's a little weird.
That's very Old Testament. So we hopped off. We hopped off that train pretty quick. But amongst the other actresses in that list was Daisy Betts. And so we reached out to her agent on a Friday. Her agent kind of reluctantly put it in front of her. She read it over the weekend. We got on a Zoom call that Monday.
Mm.
And we were all, her included, were like, this is it. But she's in Brisbane, Australia. She's half a world away.
Wow.
She has a 3-year-old. She has 4 kids.
Mm.
And we said, how on earth are you going to leave your family? And she said, well, you know, she said, you're not going to believe this, but actually, I was producing another film during this time. And so we'll just push that in Australia. So we'll just push that later. But my parents were already, I'd already made all the plans. My parents were already coming into town to watch the kids. Everyone had already planned on me being away. And so that's okay. And then we were like, but Daisy, what about, this is 2022. So this is on the back of the pandemic. What about your passport? Because we'd approached a couple actresses like, well, I don't have my passport. I'd love to do it, but I don't have my passport. And she was like, well, you're not going to believe this. I was in Hawaii earlier this year, and a friend of mine just encouraged me on a whim just to renew my passport. Just do it, just in case. So she had none of her family did, but she had a passport. And so that was on the Monday. And then on that Friday, she was on a plane.
Wow.
to America. And then we, if my memory serves me, we started the next like Monday or Tuesday of the following week.
Oh, that's amazing.
So she was a great miracle in the film. And man, there were so many. Obviously, the film depicts so many miracles, but there were so many behind the camera as well. Yeah.
That's incredible. Well, can I ask you about your music for just a minute?
Of course. Yeah.
Who were your musical influences? Who made you who you are today?
Well, not to sort of close the loop and tie it back into the movie, but one of the incredible exercises musically about the movie is not only, man, not only is there some great music in the film, like some great needle drops, like Jesus Jones or Rod Stewart, Lenny Kravitz, Seal, Michael W. Smith, Amy Grant, Stryper, as we mentioned.
Yes.
Like there's just some great musical moments. We actually are releasing a song in the film that no one's ever heard before as a band. But then we did a whole Inspired By soundtrack. And we did more features, Rusty, on this Inspired By than any record in the history of the band. To name a few, Stryper, as I mentioned.
Yes.
The Cray. Lee Bryce, who's a country artist.
Yes.
Michael W., Amy Grant. We remade their songs, okay. Lead Me On and Place In This World. And they sung on them.
Wow.
Our sister, Rebecca James, Sleeping At Last. Hilary Scott from Lady A. So many just marvelous names on this. And we had so much fun because, again, speaking of musical influences, this is the music that built us.
Right.
You know.
Wow.
This is the era that we fell in love with music were all of these bands and artists. Seal was a massive, his records were massive influences, a massive influence on Luke and me. And so to be able to do this Inspired By and sort of take the lid off the thing, there's hip-hop songs on there and country songs on there and hymns on the Inspired By, was just such a great exercise. And so I would put them, a lot of those acts, particularly the legacy acts, in the category of heroes.
U2
is massive. Bono's a massive inspiration for me as well.
I just saw them at the Sphere.
I did too. Did you see them towards the end then?
I did. Amazing.
Sort of transcendent.
Yeah. It's just...
I said to someone...
Information overload.
When I left, I said, in the history of mankind, there has never been a musical, sonic or visual experience more curated and more technologically advanced for the human emotion than what the Sphere is. Think about it.
Right.
Never. I mean, the technology in that room is outrageous.
Right.
We go into basketball arenas so often, and they're designed for a bunch of really tall blokes to bounce a ball back and forth. They're not designed for a concert, you know?
Right.
But this was 17,000 people, and this whole thing was designed for a live performance.
Right.
It's just...
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't even describe it. You got to sing a song with Dolly Parton.
True story.
What was that like?
We just wanted to give her a break. You know, she's a new artist. Wanted to just find.
She's going to open really, for y'all.
Really wanted to find her. One of the great highlights and compliments of our time as musicians.
Mm-hmm. You
know? For so many reasons, Rusty. One, because first of all, we are brothers to a woman, Rebecca St. James, who's an artist, and we had a front row seat of her journey as a musician. It's hard to be a woman in music. Mm. I'm a husband to a wife who is a Latin country artist. It's hard to be a woman in music. Dolly's been in music for 50 years.
Yeah.
Think about all the chauvinism, misogynism, and all the, you know, and she's a beautiful woman. Like, just think about all she's had to deal with in her 50 years, and yet she still has that light.
Right.
She still has that grace. She's like, oh, you're a handsome one. People tell me I need to be upset at men. I love men. Like, and she stayed faithful. You know, she's faithful to her husband. And and she's written, Jolene, like, yeah. I will always love you. I mean, she's written some of the great songs of all time. And so when we presented God Only Knows to her as an idea, I mean, I ask a lot of people to be involved and I get shut down a lot, to be honest. And within presenting it, like a week later, we were on the phone with Dolly herself. And I remember her saying on the call, like, y'all, I love this song. I think it's one of the great songs I've ever heard, and I'd love to sing it with you, and we should do a music video, and we should perform it on television. And your jaw, the combination of your brain falling out of your head and your jaw hitting the floor, you're just going like, how can this be? You know, that she wants to sing, and she was as advertised, Rusty. That's what I'm also so proud of. You sometimes you get worried about the peek behind the curtain because you're like,
yeah, right.
Where are all the dead bodies?
Right.
You know, buried. And she's just so charming and lovely and lovable, and it was a great experience. We won a Grammy for it with her.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It was just preposterous, you know.
Well, let me ask you this about your music. Last question about that. And I know you write these songs. You have to record them. You have to play it like a million times for them to get all they want, you know, to be able to put it on a,
yeah,
whatever we say now, not an album, but Spotify.
Streaming platforms.
Right. And then you go out and perform it. There's got to be songs you're like, oh my goodness. I know this is somebody's first time hearing this live. I got to put everything into it. But there's got to be a song that you think, but that one means something right now. What's that song for you right now?
Do you have that with sermons, by the way?
Yes.
Like,
absolutely.
But you have the go-to one, right?
I got the go-to
that
one.
You're like, but you and you still enjoy it?
Parts of it.
Parts of it. Okay. Fair enough. I think similarly to you, probably, there are those songs that, an eye roll is a strong way to put it, but there's songs that you just have, you've performed 1,500 times at this point, you know. But the way we approach the live show is so much more about creating and curating experience for the audience, much more than what we want to get out of the night. And that's actually a really helpful mindset, because you're sitting there going, okay, you know, what are these... their joy, it's that whole adage, it's greater to give than it is to receive, right? It's like when you see that song, when you see Proof of Your Love that you've been singing for better part of 10 years mean something to someone, you go, well, that makes it worth it. And yes, there are certainly nights where you're like, do I really have to? But the nights are actually probably less about the song and more about, like, you just got nothing left to give. You know how it is. You have to show up at 9:30 on a Sunday. Like, you have to show up at 9 p.m. on a Saturday night or whatever it is. And it does not matter what life you're walking through, relationally, emotionally, spiritually, health-wise. I mean, you kind of need to, you've got a commitment.
Right.
And so it's more about the, like, I don't know, have it in me tonight. And God's grace is sufficient, because somehow we're still standing and somehow we still end up showing up, you know. As far as songs though that are like that just are a real thrill to sing, Burn the Ships has actually been one that has was sort of slow and steady, but it's like compounded over the time. I think we released that song about 5 years ago, but almost now more than ever you just see people. I remember a month or two ago we were playing it, and from the moment the song came in, that little line comes in, you just there was someone sitting in sort of the front area, and you could just just see them break. And so literally towards the end of the song, she was close enough where I got to literally go. I've never spoken to this woman in my life, but I got to step off the stage. And I just got to hold her, and she just wept. And there was something about the power of music, the power of God, the power of that moment. That like, and I've not obviously seen her since. But it was like, we are connected forever through that moment. And she felt safe.
Right.
12,000 people in the room just to weep. I don't know. I don't even know what took place, you know, what great loss she'd faced or hurt she'd faced, but yeah, that'll humble you.
Wow.
Quick.
That's so good. And one day you'll find out what was going on.
Yeah, one day.
One day.
One day. Come up to me on the other side of this whole thing and say, hey, you remember when we were back down there and this thing happened? Yeah.
Okay, so I got to ask you this. Australia's greatest treasure. I'm going to give you a few options.
Okay. Is this like a test?
Nope. You personally.
Because I think I'm the authority here.
Personally. Rusty. All yes. Right. Crocodile Dundee.
Right.
Crocodile Hunter.
Good pull.
Okay.
Good delineation.
Hugh Jackman.
Oh, man.
Nicole Kidman.
I'm going to have to put my coffee down for this. This is serious.
Or Men at Work.
Just got serious. All right. I can take Men at Work off the table. Sorry, guys.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
They're off the table.
Okay. Oh, wow. Vegemite sandwich.
I'll take Crocodile Dundee off the table as much as I love the film franchise. So I'm going to leave you with a Crocodile Hunter, Hugh, and Nicole. I'm going to rate them top three.
Okay.
Because I don't think I can pick.
Okay.
Or all three as number one. I admire Nicole because similar to Dolly, like the girl, the lady has just moved continents and she's still got that sparkle in her eye.
Mm-hmm.
She lives just a few miles actually from where we live in Nashville, Tennessee. Her and Keith, and I have much admiration for her. I am a enormous fan of Hugh Jackman.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know if I've said it publicly, but he would be at the top of the list for me as actors are concerned.
He's Wolverine and Greatest Showman.
Yeah. And I love the way he can shapeshift in roles as well. And I love the fact that he's kept... I he seems like a really kind man. I've heard a lot about him. And then I don't think you can ever put Crocodile Dundee on Steve Irwin on a list and not put him at the top because he's immortalized now because of his life and his death, frankly. Mm-hmm. And it was a crazy thing to see Australians go. They were so annoyed with Steve most of his career because they were just like, you know, you're giving Australia a bad name, mate. This is what everyone thinks of. When they think of Australia, they just think of the Crocodile Hunter. And like, we're not all like that, you know, that right. whole thing. And then when he passed, he's like a national hero, you know, and rightfully so, because never has there more been a genuine man who just loved God's good earth and loved his family well. And they're still living on his legacy. So I can't choose. I got to go. It's a 3-for-1.
I'll accept that. And that's the right answer. Thank you.
Man.
Thanks for being at the church. Thanks for what you're going to do for this conference. And thanks for sitting down with me.
Great to just sit down for a
moment. I appreciate it, brother. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I did. I love their music. I love their movies. And I love just getting to know their heart a little bit more. Hey, next week, we're going to be back with brand new content. Can't wait to share this one with you. I have had my kids on the podcast before. I have had my wife on the podcast before, but never have we all been on the podcast before. One of the number one questions we've been getting since we moved to Texas is, hey, what's it like living in Texas after living in California? Well, I decided to sit down with my entire family and ask, and I got some answers I was not expecting, even though we talk about it all the time. So can't wait for you to listen to our conversation next week with my family. Until then, keep it simple. We'll talk to you next week.